The Dark Web Files. Exposing the internet's hidden underbelly.
You press play. You hear a voice. Maybe two. It feels personal, direct, like it's just for you. That's the promise of podcasting, isn't it? An open, accessible conversation. But what if I told you that for every show you subscribe to on the bright, open internet, there's a shadow version, an echo that exists in a place designed to be hidden?
That's what we're talking about today, the invisible airwaves. And Mark, for me, this topic hits close to home. I got into this industry because I love the idea of democratized media. Anyone with a microphone and a story can find an audience. The thought that there's a whole parallel industry operating in the dark, with its own rules, or lack thereof, is frankly unsettling. It makes you question everything you think you know about this medium.
It really does. And for me, as a creator, it's always been about the technical side. The RSS feed, the distribution, the analytics, we obsess over these things. But this is the distribution network we can't see. The one that operates beyond copyright, beyond regulation. We're talking about the intersection of the podcast industry and the dark web.
It's a place where our work can be pirated and passed around in seconds. Where entire subscription-based shows are available for free. But it goes deeper than that. It's also a place where new, illicit content is being created specifically for that hidden audience.
Exactly. And that's the journey we're taking you on today. We're going to pull back the curtain on how this hidden ecosystem works. And later in the show, we'll do something I've wanted to do for a long time. We're going to talk to someone who was on the inside.
Not just an observer. We have an interview with a man who ran one of the most popular underground podcast networks on the dark web. He's going to walk us through how it's done, why it's done, and the dangers he faced along the way.
So, the question we're starting with is this. In a world of infinite content, what happens when the airwaves themselves go dark?
Stick with us. This is Dark Web in the Podcast Industry, the Invisible Airwaves.
So let's start with the most basic level, the architecture of it. We put out an episode, like this one. It goes onto a server, and an RSS feed tells the world it exists. That's the front door. The dark web version doesn't knock. It finds a side window. It uses automated scripts, bots, that are constantly scanning for new content from thousands of shows.
So you're saying it's not even a person deciding, oh, I'll grab this episode. It's a machine, just harvesting everything indiscriminately.
For the most part, yes. Think of it like a rogue search engine that doesn't just index content. It copies it. It downloads the MP3, strips any identifying metadata that might link back to the original host, and then re-uploads it to a decentralized, often encrypted network. The original file is now a ghost. It exists, but its origin is deliberately obscured.
That feels, I don't know, violating. It's one thing for someone to share a link. It's another for our work to be systematically scraped and stored in a place we can't even see. But I have to ask the obvious question. For a show like ours, which is free to listen to, why? What is the incentive to go to the dark web to get something you can get on any major platform?
That's the question that pulls you down the rabbit hole. And the answer isn't about a single show. It's about the entire library. The appeal is having everything in one place. The free shows, yes, but also the premium ones. The entire back catalog of a subscription service. The bonus episodes behind a paywall. The audiobooks that cost $50. All of it. Available anonymously. Without a subscription. Without a trace.
So our show is essentially bait. It's part of the package. It makes the library feel complete, comprehensive. You go there for the paid stuff, but you stay because it has everything you could possibly want. It becomes your one-stop shop.
It becomes the only app you need. And there's another layer to it. Anonymity. On the regular internet, your downloads, your subscriptions, your listening habits, they're all tracked. It's data. It's a profile of who you are. In these hidden spaces, that profile doesn't exist. For some users, that privacy is the entire point. They don't want corporations or governments knowing what they're listening to, whether it's political commentary or a true crime show.
But that anonymity is a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because it protects the listener, but it also protects the people who are moving beyond simple piracy. the ones who aren't just redistributing our work, but creating their own. And that's where it gets much darker.
Yeah, that's the next step down. Piracy is the entry point. It builds the infrastructure and the audience. But once you have a distribution network that is completely unregulated and untraceable, the temptation to create content specifically for that network becomes overwhelming for some. It's a captive audience that is actively seeking out things they can't get anywhere else.
And what kind of things are we talking about? I mean, my mind immediately goes to the worst possible places. But is it really that? Or is it more mundane? Is it just controversial political stuff that would get deplatformed elsewhere?
It's both. It's the entire spectrum. You have everything from legitimate investigative journalism that is too dangerous to publish openly, to deeply disturbing, highly illegal material. The platform itself is agnostic. It's just a set of tools. But those tools enable the creation and distribution of content that has no place on the open web. And that's where the real danger lies, not just for us as creators, but for society. It's a broadcast system with no off switch and no accountability.
And no way to even know the scale of it. We can track our public download numbers, we can see the charts, but this is a black box. We have no idea if 10 people are listening in this space, or 10,000. It's a completely invisible audience. And that thought is genuinely chilling.
It is. And the chill for me comes from the fact that it's not a one-way street. It's not just broadcasting into the void. These hidden platforms have their own comment sections, their own forums, their own communities. So the creators of this content, even the most extreme stuff, are getting feedback. They're getting encouragement. They're building a following, completely shielded from public view.
Oh, that's a dimension I hadn't even considered. So it's a self-reinforcing ecosystem. It's not just a library, it's a social network, a dark social network built around this content. So what is the draw? For the truly bespoke stuff, the things made for that audience, what itch is it scratching that the clear net can't?
I think it's about transgression. The appeal is the forbidden nature of it. On the surface web, there are lines you can't cross. Content moderation, terms of service, the law, they create a framework. In these spaces, the absence of that framework is the feature. It allows for a kind of radical honesty, or what they would perceive as honesty. That's impossible anywhere else.
But radical honesty can be a pretty terrifying concept. I mean, are we talking about someone producing a podcast that's essentially a live diary of them planning a crime? Is that the kind of thing we're dealing with?
That is absolutely the kind of thing. Think of it like this. Audio guides for things that are highly illegal. Not just a theoretical discussion, but a step-by-step instructional series on, say, social engineering scams, with real-life audio examples of them being carried out. The podcast isn't just content. It's a tool. It's a masterclass in criminality.
Wow. So the intimacy of the podcasting format, the feeling that someone is speaking directly into your ear, is being used to teach people how to break the law?
Precisely. It leverages the very thing we love about this medium, its personal, authoritative tone, for a completely different purpose. Imagine a calm, well-produced show with good audio quality that sounds like any other educational podcast you might listen to. But the subject is how to bypass a specific security system or how to synthesize a controlled substance. The medium legitimizes the message in a very unsettling way.
It makes it feel less dirty, less like a rambling manifesto on a text-based forum, and more like a curriculum. And the people listening to that, are they all aspiring criminals?
I don't think so. I think for many, it's a kind of, I don't know, informational voyeurism. It's the same impulse that draws people to true crime, but taken to its logical extreme. They don't want to hear a journalist recount a story from 10 years ago. They want to hear the person who is doing the thing talk about it. Right now. It's the illusion of unmediated access to a forbidden world.
The illusion of authenticity, which is the holy grail for any creator, isn't it? But this is an authenticity that can only exist in a place with no consequences. It's a performance of reality that would be impossible if the lights were on.
Exactly. And that's the core of it. The darkness isn't just a shield. It's a stage. It allows for these performances. And when we spoke to our source, the man who ran one of these networks, that's the thing he kept coming back to. He wasn't just a distributor. He saw himself as a producer, a gatekeeper for a new, dangerous kind of art form.
A producer. That reframes the whole thing. It implies a sense of curation, of quality control, even. He wasn't just running a server with a bunch of stolen files. He was building a brand. A brand for the unbrandable. And that is a truly disturbing thought to take into this next part of our conversation.
And that's the part that I still can't quite get my head around. The idea of quality control. It suggests that this isn't just a chaotic data dump. It's a curated experience. This person we spoke to, he wasn't just facilitating piracy. He was making editorial choices about what to feature, what to promote. He was building a shadow version of a podcast network with its own star creators.
Which implies there's a value system at play. It's not just anything goes. It's the best of the worst goes. That's so much more deliberate. And it makes me wonder, what does that do to the creators on our side of the wall? We work in a world of reviews, of charts, of public feedback. It's stressful, but it's transparent. Their work is being judged and consumed by an audience they can't see, by rules they don't understand.
There's a total loss of control. And for the creators on the dark side, it's the opposite. They have this insulated, protected feedback loop. They can be as extreme as they want, and their audience will only reward them for it. There's no advertiser to pull out, no platform to demonetize them. It's a perfect, dark little petri dish for radicalization.
So, after all this, after talking to him and digging through these hidden corners, I have to ask the big, lingering question. What do we do? I mean, is there anything that can be done? It feels so vast and untouchable.
Honestly, from a technical standpoint, it's an arms race you can't win. You can try to watermark audio, you can try to trace the source of the initial leak, but the architecture is designed, from the ground up, to resist that. It's like trying to empty the ocean with a bucket. For every network you manage to disrupt, two more can spring up, because the tools are out there.
That's deeply pessimistic. So we just accept that our work, that anyone's work, will be scraped and used as a gateway to this other world?
I don't think we accept it, but I think we have to understand it. The solution, if there is one, isn't technical. It has to be, I don't know, social? It's about making the open, legitimate podcasting space so compelling, so valuable, and so community-driven that the appeal of the shadows starts to fade. You have to win the war for the listener's attention and trust, not the war on bandwidth.
So you fight the darkness by making the light brighter. I want to believe that. I really do. But the allure of the forbidden is powerful. And what this whole conversation has shown me is that the podcasting industry, my industry, which I thought was all about open conversation, has a basement, a locked basement. And we've just spent an hour listening to what's scratching at the other side of the door.
And maybe, just knowing it's there is the first step. Acknowledging that the invisible airwaves exist. It doesn't solve the problem, but it makes us all more aware of the ecosystem we're a part of. The light and the dark. It changes how you think about pressing publish, doesn't it?
It changes everything. A moment of silence, letting the weight of the conversation settle. The soft, ambient music from the intro fades back in, a little more melancholic than before. You've been listening to Dark Web and the Podcast Industry, The Invisible Airwaves. Thank you for joining us on this unsettling journey.